Welcome back to Season 9 of Talking with Traders. We're into the fifth year of this podcast that began in 2020. Once again, IG have come on board as the sponsor of the podcast. We're truly grateful to have such a global leader in online trading as our sponsors. In the coming weeks, I'll be interviewing various guests from around the globe on the topic of trading. Some of these will be past guests that we invite back onto the show, and some will be new guests. The idea is to attract a broad spectrum of different perspectives from various players in different areas of the markets. None of what you hear here is financial advice, but it is intended to get you thinking about how you might be able to apply what you hear here to your own trading and investing. Remember to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. That way, you'll be notified when new episodes are released. Or if you watch these interviews on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and give us a thumbs up and leave a comment if you wish. We welcome the engagement. Once again, thank you to IG for sponsoring this podcast into its fifth year, and thank you listeners for your continued support. Now, let's get on to this week's interview. Welcome back to the first edition of Talking with Traders for 2025. I've been excited to get this next season started, and I'm particularly excited to speak to my next guest. His name is Chris Dover from Macro Ops. Now, not all of the listeners might know Macro Ops, but I get a number of their emails throughout the week, and some incredibly insightful stuff comes out of the firm Macro Ops. So I'm very excited to be able to speak to you, Chris. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Garth. Great to be here.
Good to have you. As I do with every new guest on the podcast, I'd like to just get a little bit of insight into yourself. How long have you been trading? What got you into trading? And we'll get into the more meaty stuff a little bit later. I know you're a systematic trader, and we'll talk about that. But let's go back a little bit. Take me through your career to this point.
Yeah, so I was in the military, Marine Corps, U.S. Marine Corps.
Okay, I get the feeling from the macro ops emails that all of you guys are ex-military. Is that right?
So Alex and I were both. Brandon was not. That's like the core crew.
Okay.
So Alex and I both spent time downrange, and so we have a lot of. I don't know how to say it. Like we have a perspective on that, on the macro of the world from our not only military time, but we both contracted with the government in different areas of the government around, you know, like world events. So we have that little twist to that. And of course, that comes through in a lot of our emails, I think.
Yeah, it does. It's interesting. I'll talk about that a little bit later, maybe in terms of also the discipline and all of that that the military teaches you, because I would imagine is quite a unique aspect. But we'll get there. But so you were in the military before, and then what got you involved in trading?
So I got out of the military in 1999, right at the beginning of, or the end, I guess, of the dot-com internet bubble. And so I was in Southern California, which is not a financial hub. Mm. And I just always wanted to do that. I knew that's what I wanted to do but I never really had it in front of me. I'm from Utah, so like small town. Mm. I never saw Wall Street firsthand or any of that, but that's for some reason I just really wanted to get. So I got into prop trading back then at the end of dot-com bubble. And much like most people that get into the markets, they usually start at the beginning of something bad happening. And so, you know, 10 million people join and 1,000 people are left over. I've seen it, you know, every single time we go through something like that, everybody jumps in and then a handful of people stay, persevere and push through. And, you know, it's the mid curve meme where, you know, you start out saying, hey, everything goes up, this is great. Yeah. And that's what attracts everybody to the market.
Yeah.
Then you get, you know, beat up quite a bit. And then you come through the other side. If you stick around, once you can get through that, like, okay, I've been punished, now let's figure this out. Mm-hmm. Then you move over to that other side of the midwit meme, maybe.
Okay. All right. Super. And I mean, the way I got in touch with you guys was through some of the emails that you send out. As I said, you send an email out called the Sunday Setup, which I always thoroughly enjoy reading. Alex and Brendan send out another thing called the Dirty Dozen every Monday comes out, and I read that today. It was always very enjoyable. What particularly got me interested in talking to you was your last email. I think it was the one from the 12th of January, which it was quite lengthy, but in a nutshell, it kind of went along the lines of, there's a lot of noise in the market. A lot of people are sort of panicking or emotional about the markets, but you don't really experience those emotions to the same extent because you're a systematic trader, and your orders are placed, your position sizes are calculated beforehand. You've got a process that's very rigorous, and you're just going to do what you're going to do, and you're not going to get swayed by all the noise in the market. So the question I've got for you really is that, were you always a systematic trader or not?
Ironically, I was taught initially to get into systematic, but no, then I had to go on my hero's journey, I suppose, for lack of a better term, and go discover everything else out there and find my way back to systematic. So again, back, that midwit stuff again, very much. Systematic started out as being just, it made a lot of sense. And especially when you're early on in your time in the market, it's very easy to be influenced by anything and everything. And, usually that is somebody making incredible amounts of money really quickly doing something. And so you kind of go on that path of like, oh, you just keep buying dips until it returns and you'll be, super rich, or, you short the housing market bubble, or like you do the big short thing or something like that. But eventually, yeah, I came back to systematic once I realized that there was, it's more of a business. Operating in a systematic way is just like running a business, should be, where you kind of the scientific method of things. You have your idea, create the hypothesis, run the studies, get the results. Test, see how the results are, share the results, and then make adjustments. Same sort of thing in the markets. You can have an idea of what you want to do in the markets. What I found that the more repeatable it is, the obviously more sustainable it is. If what you're
Welcome back to season 9 of Talking with Traders. We're into the 5th year of this podcast that began in 2020. Once again, IG have come on board as the sponsor of the podcast. We're truly grateful to have such a global leader in online trading as our sponsors. In the coming weeks, I'll be interviewing various guests from around the globe on the topic of trading. Some of these will be past guests that we invite back onto the show, and some will be new guests. The idea is to attract a broad spectrum of different perspectives from various players in different areas of the markets. None of what you hear here is financial advice, but it is intended to get you thinking about how you might be able to apply what you hear here to your own trading and investing. Remember to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. That way, you'll be notified when new episodes are released. Or if you watch these interviews on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and give us a thumbs up and leave a comment if you wish. We welcome the engagement. Once again, thank you to IG for sponsoring this podcast into its 5th year, and thank you, listeners, for your continued support. Now, let's get on to this week's interview.
you're trying to do is not replicable, then you're just hoping that you luck into it every day or every week or every year that you do the job. And sure, I'm not saying that that's not doable. I'm saying that I found that the systematic approach is doable. So I go that route for me.
It's interesting. I mean, I've actually chatted to a couple of systematic traders in the last couple of episodes of this podcast. I spoke to Tom Basso a little while ago, who I know he's also in Arizona, there where you are, and also to Lawrence Bensdorp, who's also a well-known systematic trader, and now to yourself. So it's interesting to get the insights from all of you guys and to see the sort of the mechanical nature of it and the way it is. you can remove the emotions out of the market to some extent. Do you find that you don't experience the emotions, or you're just more in control
Oh,
of
I
them?
totally do. I was just thinking about it. Let me. It's January, mid-January of 2025. There was a 2024 was a really good year. We had a rally into April, kind of. I'm talking equities, S&P. Let's just talk S&P 500. Rally into April, bit of a pullback. Rally into July, August. We had like the yen carry trade unwind crash. And then a rally into December. One of my systems, or a number of my systems, are trend following, and they adjust sizing and exposure based on volatility. So the idea is, if it's going up early in the trend, that's a nice, quiet, easy flowing trend, and everybody's kind of just bored and like, is this, is it not, or whatever. And that's when my exposure is usually biggest. As we get further on into the trend, it starts dropping my position. So, it just narrows down because the daily percent changes, let's say, go from maybe 25, 50 basis points in the beginning part on a day-to-day basis, and they're very slow and methodical. As you get to the end, you start looking at 1, 1.5, 2% moves day over day here and there. And so when you need you need a much smaller position size as you get further in the trend to make the same sort of return. So volatility increases, sizing drops. So just as we get to the point, April, July, December, the first parts of those months, I start adjusting my plans for the family vacation that we have coming up. No longer is it, oh, we're just gonna, drive to Mexico, or, whatever. We're taking a private jet probably, because it's gonna, and I'm starting like, oh, we could do this and we could do that every single time. And then as that happens, all of my systems start just kicking out the positions almost to the day. So it was most recently in December, before the FOMC meeting, which I think was on a Wednesday, Sunday and Monday night, I went from 100% exposure down to about 10% exposure in a day or two on like all crypto was out. So I'm long only trend crypto. And then on, I believe it was either Monday or Tuesday, S&P and NASDAQ just went completely flat. And I'm like, what? This is like the bullish. What's, come on, we got a big holiday to pay for. Let's go. And then the FOMC meeting came out the next day, and the markets just have been in a pullback ever since. So that happened. It happens each and every time. So personally, I get excited. Yes. Do I mess with my systems? Absolutely not. Do I, I don't go override the systems. I don't change my position sizing. I don't say, oh, well, let's just stay in because this time's different. The few times that it is different, I'll get back in and whatever, it'll, the system will pull me back into the thing. So, yeah, there is still emotion involved, is the way to say that. It is, and boring. The other side, we've been in the crypto since that period in December. It's just been long Bitcoin, no altcoin, no, you're sitting there just bored all summer long, bored, like just watching things you're hoping to happen. So those are usually the two. I go from excited and bored, and so maybe the other gentleman, systematic gentleman we're talking about, are a little better at it on that end, thinking about it. But yeah, it's still, it's still fun to daydream when you're having a good run.
I don't know whether you know Stephen Goldstein, but he's a coach, and he's been on this podcast twice. But he's always said, that your emotions are like your shadow. You can't really lose them. It's always there, but you kind of got to just accept it and learn to control it, as it were.
I love emotions. Emotions, they give you, like, I'm not trying to hide the emotions. I just have, things in place to keep them from, doing bad stuff.
That's good. So you're a trader that eats what you kill, right? And what I mean by that, you pay your bills off what you make as a trader. Do you have any outside sources of income besides trading, or is it all down to your trading?
I do consulting in a number of areas. outside of trading. So that is another contributor to the family's bottom line.
Right.
But when the majority, well, the most consistent income I have is trading for sure.
Right. And those outside things, let's call them risk-free income sources. Do you find that having that actually helps your trading mindset? Just knowing that you've got a little bit of the buffer, regardless, there's some money coming in at least.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is, it is, yeah, I would say that. It also, getting away from the screens, getting away from coding and researching and reading and just being involved in the market, writing, and going and getting a different perspective on things has, always netted great results for me. Sometimes I
Right.
miss things, but having systems in place allow you, it's almost like I've done so. You do so much with the system so that you can do these other things, and if you don't go do those other things, you maybe you get worn down, beat up, tired a
Yeah.
little bit. Find a good
Right.
hobby if you're not finding. I like to
Yeah.
work. I like to get out and get into certain industries and be involved in things that are completely different than the trading side, and
Right.
it makes the trading side so much better
Yeah.
to have a different perspective.
Yeah. Interesting, because I guess it can become all consuming if you're just sitting in front of it all day, every day. And Chris, what are the sort of things that you trade? I mean, you've talked a bit about crypto, and I know from the emails that you send out in your Sunday setup, you do reference crypto quite a lot. But you trade, from what I understand, it's not just crypto, it's most things, right? You got quite a broad array of stuff that you trade.
Yeah, one of the core pieces of my trading is I won't want to say diversified, but multiple systems, multiple markets, getting with the intention to reduce volatility. So, I can reduce volatility with position sizing, adjusting that. I can also reduce volatility with, a multitude of strategies: long, short, trend, mean reversion, ARB, things like that. But yeah, so crypto, I trade which it, for me, is mostly trend, long only. There is some, I'll say about 5% of my entire trading is discretionary.
Okay.
And when I have those, they happen very infrequently, and it just kind of everything lines up either perfectly and it works, or I feel like it's perfectly and I've just forced it and I didn't do it right. But I trade futures, US futures. So I'll do equities, equity indices, currencies, metals, energy, ags, interest rates, those are, and crypto futures. Those are my main, that's my main universe. So we're looking at 8, 2, 3, 4, approximately. So it's probably something like 30 to 40 futures contracts that I'll trade. And then equities, depending on the environment.
Right, individual stocks. All right, super.
Shares, as you guys would say.
Shares, yeah. And what's the frequency of the trading? I mean, that's quite a lot of markets to be watching. So, how frequently do you trade? And I guess this is a difficult question because I'm sure some periods are much more active than others. Like you said, you've had periods where you're bored, right? Which I guess means that's you're not doing very much during those times. But what I guess I'm trying to get at is that in terms of frequency, I mean, are the systems that you've developed, are they like medium-term systems where you hold for a couple of days to a couple of weeks or longer? Or are some of the systems intraday systems, or is it a hybrid of all of the above?
It's that. So the intraday stuff, unless like I just day traded NASDAQ futures for a little bit here, made a 40 point win or something like that. Last time I did that, a couple of months ago, really. So that was more of an outlier. I just it just like clicked in my brain. I saw the pattern. I saw it. I did it. Everything lined up. Let's go. But for the most part, any intraday stuff I do is going to be algorithmic, and that's going to mostly be focused on equities. So, yeah, just kind of, and a lot of it has to do with just changing position sizing throughout the days. And yeah, the swing trading that I do, the majority of that, especially on futures, that can all be done by hand. That's an end of day. I just take a look at the end of the day, go through my universe, see what's set up. Everything starts with the market regime that it's in. If you read yesterday's email and the
I
other
did.
emails, I talk about that quite a bit. And the idea is that you just want to be in and you want to be playing the game that you're playing. Like you don't want to, go out with a golf club to play tennis, right? It's and that's because a lot of people do, and they don't realize that that's what they're doing. They don't realize that they're trying to short a bull market in the S&P 500, for example, which spends almost 90% of its entire existence in a bullish regime. So it's kind of like, okay, you're hoping that you're really right that one time out of 70, 80 years of data. The 10% of the time that it's going to be lined up there for you. There's other markets that you can do that very effectively with. And then to with and those are mostly the mean reversion stuff that we're talking about on the end of day that might be a couple of days to a week or two. When we get into the trend following stuff, which is my favorite, my preferred, the most ideal, lowest win rate. Those can last months. In fact, Bitcoin got long in October 2023, and it's January 2025. So we're a year and a half in on that long.
Still long,
So and no, it, yeah, it's just adjusting sizing a little bit is the only thing that it's been doing. So yeah, the trends last the longest. They can go multiple weeks, months, years. Mean reversion is week or two at most. One to one day to maybe 2 weeks is probably that. And then the intraday stuff is algorithmic and yeah,
I
intraday.
was interested in what you said there a moment ago, that the trend following stuff actually has the lowest hit rate. That's interesting. And funnily enough, that's also something that Tom Basso mentioned as well, that and it's kind of counterintuitive. A lot of people think, really, trend trading is the easiest, right? But I suppose it's easy in hindsight to see that it was a trend. You don't necessarily know at the start that it's going to be a trend. So what does that mean? You get stopped out many times, take a lot of small losses before you catch the big winner.
So I kind of look at it. There's two dials. You're going to dial up your win rate, and so in order to get a higher win rate, you have to dial down the size of your win. So you can have a lot of wins, but you're going to stack a bunch of small winners to make it. Whereas if you want to get the big winners, you got to swing a little bit harder, I guess, for lack of a better term. So you're turning down the number of swings, and you're increasing the returns on that, I guess, is
Yeah,
the
so like looking for the fat pitch almost.
yeah
Sort
you
of.
and the thing about it is, if I'm looking at whatever 35, let's call it 40, let's just go, let's say 100 markets. Maybe 30% will be in a regime, 30 to 50%, depending on where we are in the market cycle. 30 to 50% can be in a regime that would be available for a trend. But then it's where are you at in the trend? Are you at the beginning, at the end? The corn, for example, I just got in long on corn. It's going very well for me, but it's just got into a high volatility phase, and it just moves so quick. So, yeah, it's a nice win. Soybeans right next to it, same setup. It just stopped me out as it got going. So you gotta kind of, once the breakout happened, a lot of times just look at the horizontal line. It breaks out in either direction. Oftentimes it comes back in, right? a really smart algorithm is to mean revert trade that breakout,
Okay.
because people are going to have stops right at the breakout, right?
Yeah,
And
yeah, yeah.
so I know that I could fade that and get filled as it comes back in, overshoots, and then goes. So
Right.
I might have been in the weeds a little too much there, but
No, I mean, this is
those
good
are
stuff
some.
because it's the kind of stuff I love to hear, and it's an interesting perspective. Effectively, yeah, like fading a break, almost anticipating that it's going to fail initially before it gets going.
Yeah,
And
and
I think
that's.
a lot of listeners would understand that possibly because they've been on the wrong side of that. They have the guys buying the breakout and then getting stopped out, straight afterwards when it comes back inside. Whereas what you're saying is you fade that break and look to cover it on the failure for a quick profit. And
Sometimes.
sometimes,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. And again, it's, the win rates are a little bit higher
Yeah.
on the mean reversion side. Because you're not making, I'm not going for like 10R,
Yeah.
20R, 10 to 20 times my risk.
Yeah.
I'm going, 1.5, 2 times my
Yes.
risk as a profit target. I'm not trying to
Yeah.
catch the big turn there. I'm just trying to get back
Yeah.
to where it's safe to take a chunk out.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to ask you about some stats because you have alluded to it a little bit now. We've talked about, R risk rate, et cetera. When I've spoken to other systematic traders, the ones that I've mentioned, I wasn't surprised because I knew this, but I think it would surprise a lot of listeners to know that experts in this game, people like yourself, like Tom Barso, who've been around a long time and done this, expertly for ages, his hit rate is well under 50%. In fact, I think it's under 40%, if I remember correctly. And yet, he's a market wizard. He's made a lot of money. And I want to ask you the same question. Statistically, I presume you've got stats on this on your trading history. What percentage of your trades are winners versus losers?
Okay, so because I run multiple systems, let me break it down by system type.
Okay.
So when we're looking at a mean reversion type system, where that will fluctuate from like a 50% to a 70% area.
Okay.
Again, that's because we're not taking big chunks. We're
Yeah.
taking little small chunks out at a time.
Yeah.
And we're further adding market regime. So we're just playing. Playing tennis with a tennis racket in the temperature that is comfortable to play it in. Like
Yeah,
we're just
yeah.
adding these little bits to it. When it gets to a point that it's going to be, sometimes that just happens a lot. And then sometimes you get to really extreme edges. And so when we're in an environment of dampening range, my win rate will probably increase. It will not probably. My win rate increases because my profit targets become even smaller. Let's say if we're in
Right.
a wider range,
Yeah.
I'll go for like a 2R profit target. But if we're in like as the range narrows, I'm closer to one.
Right.
And so that will just naturally crank up my win rate there. So mean reversion, if just some for people who are looking to get into the systematic side. If you are comfortable yet in your journey, or if you're not comfortable yet in your journey of losing, mean reversion is a good gateway drug to get into systematic
Right.
because you can have the wins to feel confident about taking them over a
Right.
period of time. You don't care. Like short copper, I was wrong. Short copper, I was wrong. Short copper, there it is. But in the beginning, it's harder. So
Yeah.
when we get to the trend stuff. Now that can go from, and I'm not talking. I won't get into the vol targeting side of that, but just the trend generally itself that can go from 20 to 40% win
Right.
rates, and yeah, it you can do like an example because Bitcoin's on the mine right now for quite a bit. If we go back to 2016, it was 100% win rate because it got long at the beginning of it and then it exited at the end of it. 2019 was a stop out, so that's a 50% win rate.
Right.
20, 2021, whatever it was another win. So that now we're looking at 67% win rate. And then 2023 is another win. So like that's a big, it's four trades, right? So
Right.
it's that's a 75% win rate. That's not actual statistically significant for anybody to trade off of. So
Because it's a low sample size, yeah.
that's a low sample size.
Yeah.
10, almost 10 years, 8 years of data, and so it's a big trend system and only works in certain times. But when we get into S&P, I can have not S&P, I should say Mag 7. Those can have over a 50% win rate on the trend if you're long only up in the proper regime. So you can actually squeeze good amount out of it. But you're also sitting in a world of like 2022, you got stopped out and then you did nothing for a year. You just kind of sat there waiting to get back into a regime.
When you talk regime, just so that the listeners know what we're talking about here, because you explained it quite well in your last email, but you talk effectively there's five regimes, I think you said. So it's the bullish regime, so you get a bull quiet or a bull volatile, and then you get a neutral regime, which you said is ideal for mean reversion, and then you get bear quiet and bear volatile, right? And obviously the volatile regimes at either end of that spectrum are the ones where you say you then take your position size down to accommodate the added volatility that's inherent in the market at that time.
Yeah, so you could look at a regime on a number line as a trend score. That's another way that makes sense, where it's a rising trend in, let's say it's on a scale of 1 to 100. If you're on a rising trend, so above 50, 50 to maybe 75, 70 is the quiet regime. It's just rising. And then when you get towards the end, the peak of it, that's where the volatility is really, really high. And using things like market profile as an example, or auction market theory is a better way of saying it, where price looks to discover value in the early stages of a trend. It's overlapping price generally. It's not skipping. It's not S&P at 5,000. It's like 5,000, 5,001, 5,002, 5,000. Slowly grinding. As you get higher, you have a there's a 1% gap, and then it goes, and then it comes down, and then and another up 3% the next day. And so there's levels of prices that just get like stomped on. And some people will just be like, oh crap, I need to buy now. So where they had their nice safe, well, I'm going to put a limit order in or something like that. A lot of people are like, oh crap, I have to buy now. So they jump on the 3% up, and now you're in a daily range of 1, 2, 3%. And so your puke level or your margin calls are more likely, because just to backfill a normal behavior of the market is to discover value of the price. It has to drop, 3, 5% just to get back within a normal, oh, that was, whereas in the early stages, it only has to drop maybe, 25, 50 basis points to do it. And so each one of those, and on the downside too, depending on the individual market, there's, like I was saying about S&P 500, it only spends 10% of its time in that bearish regime. So the way it behaves in a bearish regime is completely different than the way something like the euro or cable or gold or something behaves, right? Because they are more accustomed to the sideways. Sometimes they can go in directional, but you have a much more even distribution of price direction and market regimes there.
Just something, it's slightly off topic, but I want to just bring it up because I thought it was so interesting in the last email that you sent out. You said that something like the S&P 500 is naturally designed to go up because the best stocks get more heavily weighted towards the top and good stocks get added into the index and the best stocks go to the front of the train, as it were. Which I thought was interesting, right? So that means that that kind of a market is likely to spend its more of its time in the bullish regimes, be it bull quiet, bull volatile, or possibly neutral. And then you made a point around the Russell 2000, which I thought was interesting. I mean, you explain it because you're the guest. I feel like I'm giving all the information, but I mean, explain to us why it was that you said, I think I've given the explanation of the S&P 500 and why it spends a lot of its time rising, but you've got a good theory on why the Russell 2000 doesn't. What is that?
Yeah, so the first thing we want to talk about in there is it's not every country has the benefit of the S&P 500 that the US has, right? We're the strongest growth economy and blah blah blah, all the biggest markets and it's our currency that everybody trades against. So we have it wouldn't apply so much with other countries indices that are the same, like FTSE and Hang Seng and what they have other unique features to them that are their economy based. So that is a macroeconomic thing. But if we're talking about the United States here, we're talking about S&P 500. The top 500 companies are in it. So if there's something that's not performing, get out of there. And then we go down to the minor leagues, the small caps, and say, hey, give me your best. I'm getting rid of this company over here. They're not doing very good. They're, whatever. Do you have something better? And if they do, then the Russell loses its best player. And that gets sent up to the S&P 500. And so whenever there's good players, they're being taken from that index. And whenever the S&P has bad players, they're just kicking out the bad players. It's just like a sports team. That likes to win, and is willing to win. So that's why Russell is now. There are periods where it does go on a big tear to the upside, and we saw that in 2021, I believe it was. When interest rates were zero, and inflation was cooking, so you had these Russell companies don't have the credit rating that like the top S&P 500 companies have, and so when credit's really low, they can get cheap credit, and their business isn't good enough to borrow. So when you're in that environment, those small companies can that index can perform, but it's usually a sign of danger ahead more than it is great economy. It's more of an overheated economy.
It's just really interesting the theory what you said though that how the Russell actually throws its bad it kicks its best players out because they go up, whereas and it's quite an interesting way of thinking about it. It's kind of it's almost like it's designed to underperform the S&P 500 on a relative basis over the long term, just
Unless,
by the nature of the way it's constructed.
if it is no longer a small cap, it can't be in the small cap index, right? It by design, it's no longer part of the small cap index. So, yeah.
Can we talk about your daily routine? You've mentioned that you've got you're a systematic trader, but what does your daily routine look like from early in the morning, pre-market routine, during the market, and then post-market?
So I wake up probably around 4, maybe 4 to 5 a.m., depending on how good I sleep. And I just wake up naturally there. I have a 4-year-old, and I take the morning shift with him, and it's best thing in the world. We just rage. Market opens here. We don't change time zones in Phoenix. So half the year it's at 6:30 a.m., half the year it's at 7:30 a.m. And I take him to school. So, best case scenario, the market has been open for 30 minutes to an hour and a half by the time I'm back from my morning. I'm not really touching buttons on the trading side. So I can read, I can write. Usually I go for a workout. So, depending on the day, it's like an ice bath. And then it's either weights or some exercise. We have a gym here in the house, And I live in the Rocky Mountains, so I'm
Right.
pretty close to just getting on trails whenever I want. If I want
Awesome.
to do that. This time of year, it's not really exciting to be on the trails with all the snowbirds and the freezing temperatures that are freezing to me and blistering to them. And then usually, so we're at midday for me right now. This is the middle of, this is 12:30. Usually I've done some reading, some coding, some writing, or some research, a block of that. So if let's say my workout starts at, let's say at about 8 to last to around 9, 10, I usually eat, and then I do a session for about an hour or two, depending on what it is I'm working on, of just cranking on some research, on some code, on some writing. And then that will take me into the end of the trading day. I'll pay attention somewhat. Oftentimes I'll maybe go for like a, probably a better way to say it's 2 to 4 hour session. Then in the afternoon, so the market closes, I'm out somewhere around the end of the day, the trading day, and I'm on the trails or I'm long walks, just I'm outside, freezing. And then I come back and I run my scans. So my algorithms, it's mostly just monitoring the server, monitoring any errors, just make sure everything's kind of running. And I can do that throughout the day or from my phone, wherever I'm at. The manual stuff at the end of the day, I do so usually right around when the overnight futures markets open, right around there, I'll go in and I'll run my scans and I'll find my entry conditions, my stops, profit targets, or whatever they are, my conditions. I'll enter all those trades in. I actually share my trades publicly in the macro ops group as well. And then if I have, depending on how much more time I have, more writing, more coding, or more research, or reading, and then family time, son's home from school, and try to get outside and play sports with him however we can, dinner with the wife and son, and then they work, sorry, she works East Coast hours as well, like I do. The stock exchange is that she works in industry. So they're to bed pretty early too. So usually in bed by about 8:30, and then just like somebody I'm maybe on YouTube from the last hour or so of the day.
Okay, that sounds great. So a lot of the work actually sounds like it's getting done actually outside of market hours. And you're not sitting in front of the screen that much during the trading session then.
Not anymore. There again, there's times, August 4th or 5th, whatever the day that the yen unwind crash happened, was a day, not a day. I went short on Friday discretionarily, and then it was a 4 or 5% gap down, I think, that day. And so I was like right on it and covered early in that day, and then kind of hung out the whole day to. It was a wild day. It was a
It
big
was,
day, so that pulled me into that. I was, 10% exposed in my portfolio, in all my systems, so even less interested to be involved in what was going on in the market because I had nothing really at risk except what I personally put on. So for the most part, I can call out the handful of days per year that I'm really dialed, at least this year, that I've been really dialed into every second. Saturday with Trump coin and all that was one of those days, ironically.
Yeah, what a day. Okay. One thing I actually meant to ask you earlier, but I didn't get there, was when we were talking about the stats. But you gave us the sort of the win rate, wins to losses. But on average, and again, it's probably system dependent, but what is the average size of winner versus loser in terms of our multiples? That you found over your systems.
Okay, so on the mean reversions, usually the biggest they ever really get to is 2R, 1R being the loss, and then but that's dialed in depending on the range of volatility. Sometimes we use volatility tools to say this is the range, and then it's not really fully at the edges of those ranges or even near it. And you're just like, okay, well, why am I using this range estimator if it's not doing it? Let me code in something that says, hey, if it's not doing it, tighten it up and see if that works. And then on the so my trend systems, I won't even talk about the equity stuff because that. The equity stuff is really just it's always constantly adjusting sizes. So that is not really an answerable one. But on the futures, I will be looking at so average winners are 5.74 R. And so average losers one. And then so the population I'm looking at, we're looking at almost 1,000 trades of that period. So that's the average of that. And the win rate overall in that period is 30, like 39, 30, 38, 39%, right around there.
So the old
That's the snapshot overall. But if we
sure.
like take 100 period chunks, you may see periods that it's like 8, and you may see periods that it's like 1 or, like flat even.
No, for sure. For sure. Obviously, it depends on the sample size. I mean, we're getting towards the end of our time, so I'm not going to keep you too much longer. But one thing I wanted to ask you is what is your why? Why do you trade? It's something I want to ask a lot of other guests this next season. What is the why? Why do you trade?
It's a great question to answer because I have a couple of thoughts initially. One thing I know is that no matter how financial secure I am, I will do this anyway. That's kind of a just the challenge of it is the challenge. I don't know. It's a path, I guess. It's like I can code and, especially with the LLMs and all that stuff that's available these days. I can do so much more than I could even consider doing. So it's that part makes it just so enticing because like I see a problem that I would have looked at a couple of years ago and I'm like, oof, that's gonna take me the rest of my life to try to figure out maybe. I don't know. I don't even know what to do here. And I'm doing stuff in 2 hours now that would have taken me my entire life before it. So that's pretty cool. Having a family, starting a family really changes that quickly. The why. So, being able to not have to leave and go do, be away from my family and be there. I feel very strong about being there for my son. And being a strong father figure for him so that he's not a burden to society. If not that he would be, but I want to do everything I can to make sure that I'm putting somebody out there into society who won't be a burden, who will be, be a, I'm hope, I'm working for net positive for society with him.
Amazing. I love that answer. Cool, Chris. Last thing is just tell us a little bit about macro ops quickly. And
Sure.
You tell us. I mean, I know you guys are a research firm, but you do a bunch of other things. You send out some really interesting content throughout the week. And from what I've seen of the work you guys send out, you really are the real deal. No nonsense. But just to tell us a bit about macro ops, please.
Yeah, the first thing we do free emails covering macro and systematic and value and just a bunch of different spaces about the market from our perspective. Again, they're free, so macro-ops.com. Just go sign up and get them if you want. If you don't do it. And then we have a community of whether we're talking family office, managers, allocators, high net worth, and just individuals who are more in the macro space. It's a paid community. It's for more of the professional side of it. There's really not the, you're not going to get like pump and dump. Hey, we're, trading this stock or, the whatever. It's more of the business side of not business side, but the macro side. And then we have a few products around that to, our process. We are working on putting together a fund, a multi-strat fund, and that's our 2025.
Right. Awesome. Awesome. Super, Chris. Well, that's it. I mean, we are out of time now, so I'm going to wrap it up there. But it's really been an honor and a privilege to speak to you. So thank you very much. As I said, I've been trying to nail down somebody from Macro Ops for a while. So to get you on the line's been a win for this podcast and certainly for the listeners as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
It's awesome. Thanks a lot. Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Talking with Traders, sponsored by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. We really are privileged to have such a strong global provider of online trading services as our backer for this podcast series. Remember to subscribe for more episodes by clicking on the subscribe button of your favorite podcast app. Or if you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, give us a thumbs up, and leave a comment. We welcome the engagement. Till next time.